Hey, Bill and Gunnan, welcome to Black Lord Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you today on this wonderful day. And Gai Barakal and Nindu, may God's peace be upon you. You're listening to this on the Yidinji Broadcast Service, which broadcasts every week on the Yidinji Territory. And if you're listening to it outside of the Yidinji Territory, then you might be listening to it via the National Indigenous Radio Service, and that broadcasts inside of the Australian jurisdiction. Ganyara joins me this morning. Good morning, Ganyara. How are you?
Oh, another fantastic day in paradise. Thanks.
Yes, look, there's been a lot of talk about, and I know that inside of Australia, a lot of the Australians are talking about the NAIDOC, the Voice, Treaty and Truth. There was an educational resource that I thought we might have a look at. And I'll just play the first few minutes of it. It's by, the narrator is Rachel Perkins, the daughter of the very famous and late Charlie Perkins, who was a fantastic advocate for his mob, and he did a lot of things for Australia and inside of that world. And also he did a lot for some of the tribes that he represented as well, when he wasn't wearing his Australian hat. Let's have a listen to this. It's sort of an educational resource explaining the Uluru Statement and things like that. Let's take a listen.
The Uluru Statement from the Heart is a message written to the Australian people from Indigenous Australians. It is the culmination of more than a decade's work and the largest deliberative process with Indigenous people on Australia's constitution in our nation's history. 13 meetings were held across the country, with a final national convention involving hundreds of delegates at our nation's physical and spiritual heart, Uluru. Almost 300 people put their signature to this historic statement. The senior boss ladies of Uluru then painted the dreamings of that place around the statement to express the ancient connection with our law and our land. The three themes of the statement are voice, treaty, and truth. To understand where these themes have come from, we must look back into the past. For thousands of years, the continent was occupied by its indigenous people, who had their own laws, leadership, and territories. In 1770, Cook claimed the east coast of Australia, and shortly after, all of the inhabitants were proclaimed as British subjects. Without their knowledge or agreement, they had come under the rule of British law and government. As Aboriginal land was claimed, the first people faced extreme hardship and great upheaval. Many Aboriginal people fought back. Others tried different means of finding a voice in the new world. In 1881, the Yorta Yorta petitioned the governor of New South Wales. They say, "All the land within our tribal boundaries has been taken possession of by the government and white settlers, rendering our means of subsistence extremely precarious and often reducing us and our wives and children to beggary." William Barak writes from Corranderk, a small parcel of land in Victoria which was all they had been left from their vast Wurundjeri territories. He says, "We should be free like the white population. There is only a few blacks now remaining in Victoria, and we blacks of Aboriginal blood wish to have now freedom for all our lifetime." These are just a few of the many thousands of letters and petitions that fell on deaf ears. In 1901, mass celebrations take place in Sydney to celebrate the formation of the states into one federated government under the new Australian Constitution. Yet the Constitution failed to recognise Indigenous people. It specifically excluded Indigenous people from being counted in the census. Further, it didn't allow the new Commonwealth government the power to make laws about Indigenous people. The first people are effectively locked out of a new Australian democracy, and 1 year later, a law is passed to ban all Aboriginal people from voting in federal elections.
Well, there you have it. An interesting presentation and more evidence that supports the Yidinji position.
It really does support our position. You'll notice that they did say that the federated, you know, the federation process was an agreement amongst the people. The people agreed to do stuff, but not the Aboriginal people. They were left out of it. They were excluded out of it. So it was, the place was settled without our consent. That's the truth of the matter. Even the government say that, the federal government say it. What you'll see is, the like you said, the narrator, Mrs. Perkins, that's an Australian citizen. The lady herself is the holder of the Australian identity, and that's all she is, just the holder of it. The Australian identity is created subject to the Constitution that excluded us, for example. We were kept right out of it. We were never counted in the original Constitution. We were never allowed to vote in anything. You name it, they done it to us. Everything they done to set up Australia was basically undermined by the High Court of Australia when they said they reject the notion that Australia was terra nullius. So that meant there was some law here. And as you heard it correctly say there, yes, there was this ancient law that was here from well before Australia even was thought about. It's that law that was excluded. It was that law that was never conquered. It was that law that was never ceded. In the Uluru Statement, it actually mentions that. Sovereignty was never ceded. If it was never ceded, then we still have it. So this is just, like you say, these educational videos. Is this now to go to the Australian high schools, for example? It looks to be a high school educational video, and it should be. However, they should correct a few facts in it before they get it out there or send it into the high school. If we were excluded from the Constitution, we were never Australians, were we? Is this the basics of basics? We were never, ever Australians. Think about it. To be an Australian, you've got to be the holder of an Australian identity. That is what is Australian. You are then seen as the holder of an Australian identity. It was said that citizenship or nationality was conferred upon us. Conferred means it was a gift. How can it be a gift if it's forced upon you? As they said there in that little video clip, that the people become British subjects. You know, the Yorta people were British subjects as of this day. How can you just be a British subject when you still have your law, your stuff? We were Yidinji subjects. We were Yidinji citizens. We always were and always will be. We just can't be, because Cook stands up there at the end of Australia and says, I claim this whole East Coast. He was told to come here and make friends with the natives, and if possible, get some, with the consent of the natives, get some situations to put a flag on it, for example, or a British outpost. But did he get consent?
Well, if you take the words of John Howard, who was the Prime Minister back in the day, in the 2000s or just before that, is saying that, the colonies were settled without consent. So Cook may have claimed Australia, but he didn't claim Yitti, which is the true description and name for this place. All right, and that's the thing. You can create something in your mind and a title for it, but it can't be the true and correct one if someone else already has an original title for that place.
I can claim something right now. Will it make a difference to the rest of the world? No way. To go and stand up on that island, you couldn't get any closer to New Guinea just about than where he was, to lay claim to a piece of land that you couldn't get any further away from New Guinea, say Tasmania. You couldn't have got any further away, but did he go and get consent from them? Then agreement makes the law. If there's no agreement, there is no contract, there is no law. The contract makes the law. No consent, no contract, no law. How did their law apply over the Aboriginal people? It was just brute force. That's all it really was, just absolute brutality. You could say genocide if you want. We would maintain it was genocide because we were the ones being... We were being the injured ones, and the British were just standing around watching this happen. So they were party to the genocide. Anyone who was standing around watching this take place was party to it. But Cook stood up there and made a claim. He didn't ask anyone, didn't tell anyone, didn't do anything. How can it be a legitimate claim if you don't go and tell the mob down the road, I'm going to take your land off you? If they then say nothing, then that's a fair enough claim. But just to stand up there in the middle of nowhere and say, I claim the whole lot, on an island of all places, a little tiny island of all places, allegedly lay claim to the whole East Coast. He did not go and see one lot and say, can I get a bit of land off you? That was the fatal flaw in the Australian Foundation right today. It was him standing up there making that claim. Then the British coming in as a settlement is the second flaw in Australia to Australia's foundation. A settlement means it was not gained by war or conquest. They could have gained the territory by war at the time. If they would have moved in with the military forces and killed off the Aboriginal people, and then, you know, by declaring war on them, so the rules of war apply.
Well, even then, that would have been their rules of war. And who goes to say that their rules of war wipes out anything? And that's the truth. I mean, that's probably their agreed principles, which are European-based ones. But even that's questionable.
It really is. And if they would have wiped out all the Aboriginal people, would have shot everyone out, fair enough. Then the place was definitely, definitely terra nullius. There was no one here left to, you know, with the rule of law. But they didn't do that, because if there would have been, was a war, there should have been a peace negotiation and a peace settlement. And that's where you cede your sovereignty over there at that peace negotiation. Yeah, okay, you can rule the place, run the place, whatever you got to do. But that never even took place. Because I know we wrote off and asked about this. We asked the Commonwealth of Australia to supply evidence of where the war took place, of where the peace negotiation took place, of what actually went on. But it was actually said quite correctly in the High Court that it was done by settlement. They just moved in. They didn't touch our sovereignty, our authority, our law, and that's why the Uluru Statement says sovereignty coexists, side by side with that of Australia, with the Crown. Now, what they're trying to do with this, with the Aboriginal Australians, and this is what I keep saying on the show, be careful of the native troopers. You know, they used them before. They used the Aboriginal people against the Aboriginal people to go and wipe each other out. I think the same has come today. They give a few a very privileged position in life with a bit of money, and they go forward and put forth the policies that the white Australia want the Aboriginal people to hear. How well Australia is going to look after them, what it's going to do for them when you join Australia. What you're going to get? You're going to get nothing more than what you've got now, because you already are Australians, like this poor young lady here. You know, great job, great effort. And if she wants to be Australian, that's really great by me. That's fine by me. In saying that, if she could only see the real authority of her law was back in the mob, back in the tribe, back in the nation, not Australia. There's no money back there, no Australian money, but there's real authority to say this is what should happen or shouldn't happen on my country. This is the consultation and cooperation in good faith.
I know this woman, and she does that. She does say who she is, and she also says her tribal reveals her tribal identity. So she's a Narrina woman from what Mbantua, what Australians would say, Alice Springs. And so I know some of the Narrina families there, and it's true what you're saying. They have every right to go back to that territory and to that sphere of law and activate it, and to instruct the Commonwealth of Australia or the Northern Territory or whatever person is created by that constitution. And I would say this to anyone out there who thinks, oh, well, we lost our language and law and this, that and the other. There is no greater law than that of the Creator. And if you have a Creator story, or one that created the universe and your territory, then that is the highest form of law. And I want to remind people, Nayendu Walpa Dindalji Buyal, Yingabulumba Yitti Najan, Nayendu Sovereignty and Dominion Najan. That is basically saying, we stand here solid as a rock, thanks to, you know, God. And, you know, even in the Holy Scriptures, it says that the Lord is my rock and my fortress. And it's very sounding, similar sounding words there, that Gideon maxim there. So that's what this is all coming down to, is that the spiritual law and the spiritual application of law is the Most High. But you got to know and have a relationship with that spirit. Then you can go and create all these other things, an office and an instrument to talk to the rest of the world who may not have a spirit, who may have walked away from their spirit and walking around here spiritless.
Let's have a look at a native title determination by Justice Dowsett here for the Yidinji mob. It said they had a cosmological narrative. That was his first sentence of how to recognise a society.
Absolutely. Bible stories.
That's exactly what a Bible is. You could call it a cosmological narrative if you want. It's a good book. We had a very similar one. And it's basically based on the same principles of the Bible, if you want to call it that. Now, she did go on to say in the show, there is a spiritual centre of Australia. It's spiritual to the lot over there. It really is. That Uluru, that big rock coming up out of the desert, is really spiritual to them. And I agree with them over there. They shouldn't have white fellas climbing all over that rock just for the sake of climbing a rock and say, look, I've been here. It means a lot to those people. So they should not be walking all over that big rock. That has a lot of meaning. To walk on their law is exactly what you're doing, to trample it down to the ground. And that's not right. That is not. There was never one Aboriginal nation here. They were all, like the European world, broken up into separate nations, Germany, France, Austria, Russia, whatever. They're all separate. Same here. So the Yidinji spiritual centre was not Uluru, the big rock. It was back here. But we were connected to them through the song lines to over there, right through the rest of all the Aboriginal nations. They were all talking to each other. They were trading with each other. They were looking after each other. And then the British move in and stand on a little island up near New Guinea and say, we claim the whole lot. Now, that's wrong in law. It's wrong in moral. It's everything is wrong about it. So now Australia has to face up to this. And I think, Rachel is doing a good job here in trying to educate the Australians. How do you tell 24 million Australian people that whatever you think you own, you don't own? How do you educate them in that it was Australians that done the killing, done the murdering, done the plundering? The British, the Australians. How do you tell them that? How do they grasp it? How do they come to terms with it? And how do they address it after that? You see?
And Australia is a derivative of Britain. It's a wild colonial boy. You might want to say that. Certainly has been reckless in recent times. But I think that's beginning to change. And I'd like to turn our focus now to the recent Commonwealth of Australia, or the Council of Australian Governments, known as COAG to Australians. But I wonder why they had it up here. I wonder why they chose the city of Ghimoi after receiving Scott Morrison and some of the other leaders in the Commonwealth at the time last year, receiving their 1 year visa entry to the city of Ghimoi and the Yidinji territory. It's strange how these things happen, but what wasn't strange, Brother Ganyara, is that all states and territory leaders, so the New South Wales Premier, WA, SA, they all received official Welcome to Country documents, which is from the department that I work with, which is Foreign Affairs and Trade. Those are official visa entry documents to the Yidinji Territory for a 12-month period.
They really are. If you want to operate in the world of paper like Australia does, they need to have... You've got to have a visa. If you want to go to some country, for example, say you want to go to Cambodia. As an Australian citizen, you've got to get a visa to enter Cambodia. You've got to get permission. Say you want to go to the US, that's even tougher again. If you want to go to the United States, you've got to literally give them your whole life story to get a visa there, and they can reject you very quickly if they think you're an unsavoury character. So these are the sort of things you've got to have. So when they come here, they had to get, we supplied permission to be here. They asked for a welcome to country. Think about what a welcome to country is. Think about it. Can we get a welcome to country? What if you said no? No, you can't get a welcome to country. You're not welcome. But what would happen? Think about it if you said no. We said, no worries, look, we'll just keep the little charade going a bit longer, but we will issue you now properly certified welcome to country documents, entry visas for 1 year. Now, are they going to say, no, we don't want that? Because they're the ones... Remember, they're the ones that said, can we get an official welcome to country ceremony? Too easy. Chief Minister went and delivered it. And he had to deliver. So we got it in writing now, in paper. Here's your welcome to country visas. You're welcome in, no problem. You obey Australian law, you obey Queensland law, and you obey, to the best of your ability, Yidinji law, which is basically, you could say, nearly Australian law. It's very similar. Don't kill each other. Don't plunder. Don't do anything bad. So that's basically what Yidinji law is. So they've got a welcome to country document. Think about that. They say, no, we don't want it. We don't need it. Why'd you ask for a welcome to country?
Yeah, and these are the things that are quite simple, and they are the duties and roles of a government. And so not only does the Australian government have welcome to country documents, there are many others, including Russian Federation and lots of other people from the United States. For example, there have been media journalists that have had their passport stamped and received their official visa entries into the Yidinji territory. So it's about all those duties and official stuff. We'll be back after the break, though, with more Black Law Tribal Edition right across the country on the Yidinji Broadcast Service and the National Indigenous Radio Service.
Brandon! Out of school! Brandon! Out of school!
A shy black boy who came to the city to learn about life, and how his people lost their lives. His parents died when he was just a child, and now his life is mystified. Black boy,
black boy,
black boy,
black boy.
The color of your skin is your pride and joy. Black boy,
black boy,
black boy,
black boy.
Your life.
And welcome back to the program. Ganyara, we were just talking about the Welcome to Country stuff there. I thought I'd go through the Chief Minister's official speech, which he delivered in front of the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, and the New South Wales Premiers, South Australian Premier, Tasmanian Premier, the Victorian one, the WA one, and the Northern Territory and ACT Chief Ministers, but also the, I think it's the President of the local a government association. I think his name is David O'Loughlin. This is the speech that Gudju Gudju of Gimoi Burra presented and read out. Gaya Burra Galan Yunda, may God's peace be upon you. It has been a long custom and tradition for the Yidinji to welcome people with open hearts and open arms. Literally, Yidinji would embrace their visitors and lift them in the air as a mark of respect and as an act of peace. So he's very, you know, very peaceful. Today, I would like to offer the same welcome, but in spirit, which is very important to all men and women here today. Indeed, the intentions of the Yidinji nation is to be a friend to all and an enemy to none. For it is written also in the Holy Scriptures in the book of Leviticus, and if a stranger sojourn with thee in your land, ye shall not vex him, but the stranger that dwelleth with you shall be unto you as one born among you, and thou shalt love him as thyself. This is a commandment there. To all men and women here today who are not familiar with the Yidinji territory, we welcome you and offer you the most sacred gift, the gift of law from the Most High. The Yidinji nation's customs and traditions may be foreign to the Commonwealth of Australia, but rest assured the Yidinji society is here to defend the faith, and the Yidinji government has been created to protect the Commonwealth of Australia, to help settle the past and secure the future. Prime Minister Scott Morrison and all premiers and chief ministers of the various Australian states and territories, please receive now these official Welcome to Country documents. May God protect you for your every step, for he is a rock and a fortress. So there you go, some an absolutely wonderful welcome to country with the most highest things attached to it in terms of the spiritual. There's a spiritual thing there, but there's also the paper world that goes with it. Now, that obviously was a very powerful speech, and one that, you know, you can say that you own land and you can say you do this, but it's until you act like it that it becomes real for the world of actors.
And that's all they are. The Prime Minister is only an actor. You know, their premiers are only actors. These are men and women that are seen as actors in the world stage. They really are. You know, men and women all created equally before God. You know, you are born, you live, you die. So we're nothing other than an animal with intelligence. So let's keep it what it is. We now have the intelligence to make man-made law, and that's the world of paper, the world of persons, which you are seen legally through and you act through. And if you're actors, act the position correctly. Don't be gammon about it. Don't make it's for real. But when they do get a welcome to country, you get it from the real people who are here first and who are still here. There is actually I think it was in the Queensland Supreme Court, there was a determination there or a decision there that said about sovereignty, regarding sovereignty of Aboriginal nations. He said, the judge basically said, what the hell are you doing in me court? Sovereignty will only be given to those, it won't be given to you, it'll only be assumed as far as you want to take it. If you want to take it right to the limit, sovereignty's yours. If you want to take it into our court, sovereignty's not yours, because Queensland and Australia have the sovereignty if you come into their court. So the judge is telling this Aboriginal lot that. So we actually said, okay, no problem. We'll take it right to the far limit. We'll push the envelope as far as we can. And that's why when they ask for official welcome to country now, they get official welcome to country documents, entry visas. They're welcome to come to us into our part of the world now for the next 12 months. Now, Scott Morrison didn't receive one on the day, the other day there.
And I don't know, he might have been a bit funny about it, or maybe he knew what the score was.
He received one last year. He received one in September last year. So he had a 12-month visa, so he had no problem coming in and out. So we didn't need to reissue that. This is not for the media. This, you know, not a look at us just doing stuff. This is us doing things that really matter. And so he had a 12-month visa. The premiers didn't have one, so we had to issue them ones on arrival. And that's exactly what the official welcome to country is all about. Now, those premiers can come back at any time over the next 12 months and not need another visa to enter. They've already got one. But the whole idea of this, the whole idea is a treaty between us and Australia. They wouldn't need to be issued this paper every 12 months. It would be a continual visa. They'll be able to come in and out as they please. As long as they don't offend Australian law, Queensland law, or our law, they're welcome.
Yeah, like the EU, they had the Schengen states before, this the EU body now. And if you're Polish, for example, if you hold Polish identity, you can travel to Britain and to Croatia and all these other things without going through immigration. I mean, this is the like a sort of a trade block in that, you know, the Commonwealth of Australia, New Zealand, and maybe all the Pacific Island nations in the future will have this seamlessly easy system to use, whether it's facial recognition, you know, to identify the person that people hold or use. So, I think it's not impossible for the other tribes to do this because we're doing it. And you know what? It's fun. I must say that there are, other people on in this area who may lay claim to this, apart from Yidinji. This is not anything to do against that, or it's, this is, we're just looking after Yidinji business. So those things will take care of themselves in the future. So, you know, we're not here to, we can only look after our own house, basically. And we're not telling anyone that you don't own this land or that you don't belong here or whatever it may be, because that's wrong too. So to all the families out there, from this man anyway, we give you, that respect that, you need to sort those things out. Fair enough, and time will tell. We're not here to tell any man or woman that this land doesn't belong to them. But Ganyara, it is important to, while those discussions are happening around the planet, to actually keep it and hold it in trust for whoever might came back. Let's, for example, if there was a tribe that, they were here. Okay, let's look after them too, or whatever the case may be, because at the end of the day, it is all about loving thy neighbour. And, in the book of Leviticus, I think it's written there, but that's a Yidinji way also because it's codified. It's just another tribal law being written down, but it's the same here as anywhere else in the world.
It surely is. Now, as you were saying, it's not for us, though, to reason out which families do or don't belong here. What we do know is what Australia has said, is that the Commonwealth of Australia was settled here without consent. That we do know. That we do know is the problem. It's not the problem amongst the Aboriginal people. It's the problem that Australia has. If we'd done nothing today, we just went about, done our business, revitalised all our government and do what we had to do, we wouldn't have a legitimacy issue before the rest of the world. Say we brought back a police force, which we've already started to do. We had to revitalise all our institutions, and policing is one of them. What would happen if our police met their police, the Queensland police? Could the Queensland police arrest our police? Then, if they did, is there then in the court an argument about legitimacy of who has the right to be here, who has the right to have a police force here? Is it us, or is it Queensland? Because all we're going to say, look, we were here forever, and we did have what we want to call police in our world.
And furthermore, it's the Federal Court of Australia that said that Yidinji owned this land pursuant to their law. So would the police officer inside of Australia be going against that particular determination?
And is that determination actually said, the Yidinji have a system of authority in decision-making? The authority is you make a law and you've got to be able to police your law, to enforce your law. They said that. They know we had it. We bring it back. Now, who's got a validity issue? Who's got this legitimacy issue? Us or Australia or Queenslanders? Because if we're here first, and as I said, it's still existing to this very day, we can start to bring it all back under UNDRIP, the roadmap of UNDRIP, revitalise it, get it all back in place. The police officer, he arrests one of ours. The Queensland police officer arrests one of our police officers, drag him into a Queensland court. The judge down south said to the Aboriginal people at that time, go and assert your sovereignty. If you take it as far as you want, we're not going to give you sovereignty, you already have it. But you've got to go and assert it. So we're asserting our sovereignty, we're bringing back our police force. Can our police arrest foreigners? Just like theirs can? Yes, we can. Now, foreigners to us are the Australians and the Queenslanders. So we arrest their police. We drag them into our court, our system of dispute resolution. Then they've got to prove that they have legitimacy to be here. Mm-hmm. They drag us into theirs. They just say to our police officers, if you're not one of ours, there's the door, you're free to go at large. Now, who can do what here? You see what I'm saying? Our police officers can build a prison. Our system of authority can build a prison and put their Queensland police in because they're foreigners that are trespassing that won't go home, won't go away. What do they do with ours? Oh, there's the door. If you're not one of ours, there's the door. Go away.
You know what? And obviously we're not serious about arresting Queensland police officers unless there was a really good reason for it. But you know what? They do a good job. And why don't we grant them consent to be here? And this is what this is all about, right? So we grant the Commonwealth of Australia. That means its Defence Force can be here. All these wonderful practitioners in health and law, in peacekeeping, which is the police. If they're keeping the peace, and you know, good on them. That's what I reckon. However, there is that thing that's missing, and that's this treaty or formal agreement, which the tribes can say, yes, you can be on our territory to maintain and keep the peace and order and good government, subject to the terms and conditions of what the tribe sets out.
Absolutely. That was a hypothetical position. But from a technical point of view, it's a real position. They can't defeat us because our law was here first.
Oh, absolutely. This is beyond anything. It doesn't matter if it's their army. If they had a trillion soldiers here, in that world, the pen is mightier than the sword. And out of a stroke of a pen, the Yidinji government can make law and it can enforce that law.
Absolutely correct. But do we want to do that? No. No way. That's the idea of going to Canberra a couple of years back and saying, look, this is the roadmap to a treaty. We want this. We actually want to give authority to the Queensland Police Force, to the Australian Federal Police Force. We want to give you authority, and we actually also, mind you, want to give you one more level of judiciary, our court. Above the High Court of Australia is our court. So if you're dealing with issues of tribal matter, then you can, once you get to the High Court and they can't see it because it'll fracture the skeleton of the Australian law, then they can say to the Indigenous court, this is a matter for your court. So all of a sudden Australia now has one more mechanism up its sleeve, one more gun in its arsenal to enforce the law. This is very important. We actually took this to Australia a couple of years ago, down to Canberra, went down, and said, this is what we see. So, are they ready to listen yet? I sort of get a feeling that by, you know, listening to that educational video a little bit earlier there, they're starting to, how do we educate the people now? How do we bring the masses in line with the fact that what the Prime Minister has been saying over the years of we don't have consent to be here yet? You know, that educational video was to make Australians feel a bit sorry and a bit ashamed of themselves, what they've done. And now try and make amends for it. And as she said, she wants a voice in Parliament. You already have a voice in the Australian Parliament through your elected representatives. But then they go on about a treaty. They don't have a treaty yet. You can get the voice you've already got. The treaty's the next step.
That's the truth.
That is the truth. But how about we tell the truth about what happened, why you need the treaty?
Mm-hmm.
Now that would be the truth. So that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to educate the Australians. Because if our hypothetical position ever wanted to be enforced, it technically could be enforced, which would create a hell of a problem for Australia.
I could walk down the road there and take a police car and say, well, this is on Yidinji territory. It's subject to the territory rules of the Yidinji Nation. Thanks very much. But you know what? There might be a bit of a lengthy process to actually come to that realisation for the average police officer on the street who's probably saying, what are you on about? How about you talk to the police commissioner first? Or, you know, the police minister or whoever it is.
I'm afraid to say you'd probably be arrested by our police before you got too far in the police car.
The Yidinji police, that is, yes.
Yes, absolutely. You can't go and take someone else's property. Yeah. So, look, it is a double-edged sword. But our police would have to, the Yidinji police would have to enforce the law of no stealing. Sadly, Australian police didn't enforce that back in the early days.
And your point being very clearly there and correctly is that everything on the Yidinji territory is property of the Yidinji Nation. And so even if I, in my capacity as a Yidinji citizen, was to take that without following due process, yes, a Yidinji court would probably find me guilty of attempting to steal a car or whatever it may be at the time.
You can't escape the realities of modern times. There's so much stuff here. We still got to maintain our morals. If you know, let's use the Bible for a good reference book. It says there, don't steal. We had the same belief here spoken in Yidin. So the language was, don't steal. What happens if you do steal? You'll face the consequences of your action. If you stole the police car, you've got no excuse for stealing a police car. You just can't go and take it. Just because they done it doesn't mean we can do it. Two wrongs don't make a right.
And then, you know, there's this extra thing about, oh, well, Murumu, I did it under tribal law. You know. Yeah, you did it under tribal law, now you're going to get speared.
Don't go into the tribal law if you don't want to suffer the consequences of tribal punishment. And it was quite severe. You know, there was capital punishment. Now, do we want to bring that back to the average Australian? No way. No way.
Well, you notice why we didn't have prisons here in the first place. Because the law was very strong and is strong today. And I think thanks to all the elders, actually, whether you're Yidinji or not on this territory, that there is wisdom there. And to other neighbouring tribes as well, they didn't have prisons. So, you know, I think you can safely say that there wasn't an industry attached to that. But the law was pretty strong. And, you know, that's what this is all about. It's about that gift we talked about in Gujuguju's speech there to Kowag. It is a sacred gift. And it enables every man and woman to govern themselves and take care accordingly to the law of the land. And, you know, the law of the land, and that is the spiritual law now, the one that created it, is the most highest. And that's the one you should follow first. Man-made law is there to, I guess, to make sure you love your neighbour, basically. Don't steal off him or whatever it is. And that's what this is all about.
It's there to regulate what we're doing to each other, you know, to try and enforce a position of God said don't steal or kill each other. What happens if you do? That's basically what man-made law is all about, is to regulate bad behaviour in a society of people with a common belief. Now, Australia was set up. The common belief of Australia was, the intention of it, was the white Australia policy. That's why the Aboriginal people were left out. That's why we were left out. They still haven't changed that intention. And the only thing that can change that intention is the people getting together and say, look, we agree to change this to now be a multicultural Australia. But that still doesn't address the issue of no treaty, the exclusion of the people that were excluded out of including us. So anything that can cure that problem is a treaty, a proper treaty between the Commonwealth of Australia and us. Not the state of Queensland and Indigenous Queenslanders. The states were never sovereign enough, never had enough authority to be an international actor, to be recognised in the international sphere as someone having the authority to be able to do so. It had to be a Commonwealth of Australia that goes into there. So a Commonwealth of Australia needs to do a treaty with us. They need us, not Queensland. Queensland is only a part of Australia. It's one of the parts or the components that make up the whole. So a component just can't do it on behalf of the whole. So we've got to get this done properly, and then that through that treaty system done with the Commonwealth of Australia, the Premier of New South Wales is always welcome to country without an official document being handed over every time they come in, every year.
Yeah, my hand will get sore from stamping that passport too much because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we've been doing behind the scenes, ladies and gentlemen, that, you know, it does say we've run out of ink and we've done this and that. We've got to run over to get another stamps and all this stuff. So there's a lot of work to do, but it is fun. And, you know, if you do want to have some sort of experience, then contact us and you can have a look at what we do. And, you know, this is for everybody. Everyone from a different society, have a look at what we're doing. And it's for free, this knowledge and information. And there's one of the things that we love to share also. Bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen, if you are in the area which Australians describe as Sydney, I think it's in the Gomeragal territory, we will be speaking at the New South Wales Indigenous Chamber of Commerce on August 22 and 23 in the city of Sydney. And you're most welcome to come to hear this information. Whether you agree with it or not, that's fine. We're happy to talk with you anyway. because that's not, our job is to carry this this truth, or the version of the truth that we see, and to offer it to the world. And if you're there, then that's offered to you. And if you can pick it to bits, we'd love to hear it too, because it's really important for us to, you may have something to tell us. That's important. And we would love to listen to that as well, whether we agree with it or not. But yeah, so at the New South Wales Indigenous Chamber of Commerce, there are limited seats. I think there's only 60 to 80, 60 seats, I think. So you might want to contact them to make sure that there are 2 days, August 22 and 23, and we will be presenting down there the Yidinji Way. And it can only be the Yidinji Way, can't be the Yalinji Way, can't be the Arunda Way or any other way. This is not something that we're telling the rest of the world is you must do it like this. No, absolutely not. This is about why we're doing it this way and some of the things that have worked and some of the things that haven't worked. So just basically sharing that information, that experience, and I think that others would enjoy that.
They sure will. It's how do you get this out to people? How do you got to go meet them face-to-face. And as you said correctly, if you've got any questions, send it in. Let us know. Ask us the questions. See if we can address it. If you've got any points of contention with us, let us know. You know, were we not here first? Was Yidinji not here first before Australia? If you think Australia was first, let us know why.
It was a bummer, or was it the Commonwealth? This is the question, you know. Now, like we said, we don't care too much where you're from, but you got to identify yourself as the true one. And that is, you got to connect it all the way to the top, to the creator of the universe. For me, that's the number one priority. My son, you know, to fear God is the first step to wisdom, you know, or something that to that effect. And we know that there was a true one that created the Yidinji and everything that we breathe and see and touch here, and, you know, and other tribes and societies have a different name for that one. But when you know that one, that's what this is all about. I'm not sovereign, you're not sovereign, but we have access to the sovereign, and that's through prayer and our daily conversation with the Creator. And when you think about it and you talk with that Creator, that's what's leading this for us, and that's what this is all about, really. And making sure that your children and maybe their children's children will know of this knowledge, because before 1770, it was like that, and today it is still like that, even though the world is convinced probably that whatever it is that they have an opinion on God, it doesn't matter or it doesn't exist, or, you know, you hear lots of different things. Fair enough, that's up to them. And but here, as for me and my house, we will serve the one that created Yidinji.
Actually, all humans must, because stop and think about it. It's not if you're going to meet the Maker, it's not when you're going to meet the Maker, it's about how you meet him. Because we're born, we live, and we're all going to die. Every single one of us. That's the equaler. That equalizes out the whole lot for everyone. Rich, poor, indifferent, it doesn't matter. Have all the money in the world, you're still going to go and meet the Maker one day. It's how you meet him. So you see, this is the important part for everyone. Consider that. But when we get back to this here, this tribal law, that's what they basically did. They really did believe in the Maker, the cosmological narrative that the High Court or the Federal Court of Australia acknowledged existing. They believed there. But all of a sudden you're sucked into the world of money, the world of commerce, the world of capitalism, that you then start to lose touch with all this. The money cannot buy happiness. The money cannot buy eternal life. The money cannot buy good terms with the Maker. And that's where people go wrong. They step on each other to try and get up the social ladder, up the political ladder, stepping on each other's back and neck and whatever, to climb this ladder, to spear each other in the back, to climb this ladder, to get what? A good rapport with the Maker when they go and meet him? I don't think so.
Well, I'm going to share with you a wonderful scripture from the Holy Scripture. He that saith, I know him, this is what we're talking about, Gaiabar and our God, and keepeth not his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. You see what I'm talking about now? What is the truth? He is the truth. He said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. and that's what we're talking about now. So it's important to have a bit of that wake-up call if you haven't been woken up already. But we've got to look after one another, because that's the commandment. Even our own enemy, we've got to love them too. That's the truth, isn't it?
Give them the shirt off your back. Give them the food off your table. That's in the good book. Go and look it up if you don't believe me. But that's what it is. But even in tribal law here, you know, it was that. Okay, at the end of the day, we sat down, we ate together, we lived together, we worked together. That's what we've got to do now. But we're not doing that, because the modern world separates us all into individuals. Who can accumulate what? Who can get the most of what? The most junk, so to speak. That's not the way it was. But with the Native Title determinations, it gives you nothing other than evidence that you had systems, normative systems of law, where law come from somewhere and law done something. We had a system of authority and decision making. We've got to start to use the system that we had, the decision making that we did. And that's how we cooperate and consult with each other. And Australia must do that with us, because they ratified UNDRIP, not us. They ratified it. That yes, we will consult and cooperate with the Indigenous nations, however they choose, whatever they choose, they must consult and cooperate. They can't be the almighty power anymore. They're not that. They're only administrative nation.
Well, that verse I just read out there before, there's a lot of people inside of Australia who might think that they know him and keep his commandments, but they're going to get a rude shock when they meet the Maker and how they meet him, because this is what we're talking about now. You can't do those things and say that you obey the One. You know, it's a very, very important time to remind people that.
It really is. And this is what I keep saying to each other. In that world of Australia, you step all over each other. That's not looking after each other. If you really believe in that there is a central creator, call it whatever you like, if you believe in that, why would you step on yourself? You wouldn't. Why would you step on your brother? Because he's you. You wouldn't. So you've got to look after each other. And this is what it's all about. But we've got to have all these laws now to force each other to look after each other. So they can't believe in the central creator, the central maker, God, whatever you want to call him. They can't believe in it. If you've got to have law to direct you, you can't have it. If you've got that in your heart, then you can do it.
He who hateth his brother is a murderer. And that's the truth right there. So from the Yidinji, we love you all. It doesn't matter what family you belong to, or this, that, or another. You know, that is the truth of the matter. And I know that there's certain things going on at the moment in the world of Native Title, all across the continent. There's families, this, that, and other. I tell you what, look beyond that and love each other, because that is the absolute simplicity of this all. And there's plenty enough to share for everybody. And on that note, may God's peace be upon you through his only begotten Son, Yeshua HaMashiach, which is Jesus Christ the Messiah. Brother Ganyara, thanks for coming down. We'll catch you next week, eh?
Thanks, no worries. Great time down here.
Hey, Garu.